Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Vava Kama Daf Kuf Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 8 lines from the top of Daf Kuf Dalid. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance at the side in our margin where we have a nosei, a topic heading written, which reads Baal Pikodon Sha'asoi Leploni Shliach Benochichus Edim. The owner of an item that's been entrusted by someone to watch, and he appointed someone as an agent, and his appointing of him as agent was done in the presence of witnesses. Lahavi Pikodon Mibay Shomer, to bring the item that is in the house of the Shomer, the guard, the Bailey. Ha'im b'shlichus kazois yesh boi kidei liftor ha-shomer me'oinsei haderech. Is there in such an appointment of agency sufficient significance in this agency so as to exempt the Shomer from oinsei haderech, from any bad befalling the item en route back to the owner, even if it happens to be an ones, something beyond control? Will the shomer be exempt because it's been transferred now to the hands of this agent, an agent appointed by the owner of the item in the presence of witnesses? A marking will appear in the Gemara, the volcano shape, or trapezoid. And on the side of our Gemara, under the Mivneh, the structural note, we indicate, Deois b'inyan shliach shenase b'edim. These are opinions. Rav Chisda and Rabba, who you see highlighted, will be opinions on this matter. And now the Gemara. Itmar. Shliach shaso b'edim. An agent, as we mentioned, an agent to fetch an item from the house of the shomer to bring it back to the owner, and he was appointed to, and the agent was appointed in the presence of witnesses. Rav Chisda Omar Havei Shaliach, he's considered an agent, and we're explaining an agent to the extent that if anything happens to the item, Rashi uses an example of cash is going to be returned from the shomer to the owner. It doesn't have to be actually a shomer. Rashi indicates Reuven has money that is in the possession of Shimon, and there is need to convey that money from Shimon back to Reuven, and a shliach is appointed. Is this considered a level of agency which will then exempt the individual who owes the money from any further obligations? So Rav Chisda said, yes, it's considered agency to exempt the one who has to return the money is now exempt. Rabba Omar lo have shaliach. No, it's not sufficient. Rav Chisda, now we explain the opinions. Rav Chisda Omar have shaliach. He is, the agent is considered an agent to that extent that he exempts any bad that befalls the item being conveyed. The guard or the one who owes the money will now be exempt. Lochi tarchi v'ukme b'edim. The leku b'shusei. It is for this reason that the owner of the item troubled himself to establish the agency in the presence of witnesses, so that it's considered in the domain, it's considered as if it reached its destination while in the hands of the agent. So it's considered as if the return has been completed by putting it in the hands of the agent, and the one who owed the money is therefore exempt for anything that might happen en route. Rabba Omar lo havi shaliach. The agency is not a level of agency where it's considered as if when put given to the agent that it's as if returned to the owner. Hochi komar, the owner is really saying thusly. Inish mehem nohu, the agent that I appointed is a trustworthy person. Isam chismoch, if you want to rely on him, go right ahead. Iboyes lishdure biodei, shadar biodei, if you want to send the owed money in his hands, go ahead and do so. However, if some ones arises en route, the monies are considered still in the possession of the shomer, for which he will bear responsibility. As we continue, you notice a triangle marking. These triangles represent kushos al Rav Chisda. There will be questions against Rav Chisda's opinion. Tanan, Hashoyel es hapora v'shilcho biyad benoy biyad avdo biyad shlucho. A person wants to borrow a cow, and the owner of the cow sends it with his son, with his slave, or with an agent. Oy biyad beno biyad avdo biyad shlucho shoyel, or he sends it with the son, slave, or agent of the borrower. Umesa, and the animal dies. It dies en route. Potter, the shoel, the borrower, is exempt. He is exempt until he himself orders the shaliach, orders the agency. Even further than that, Rashi says, Ad sheyoymar lo mipiv l'shalcho lo biad beno, until that borrower would instruct the owner, send it with my son or my agent. Hai shlucho hechidomi, the reference to the agent. What are the circumstances? I dolo osa biedim, if he wasn't appointed in the presence of witnesses, menoyadinon, how would we know that this is his agent? Elo de'osa be'edim. Rather, we're dealing with an agent appointed in the presence of witnesses, just like the case we are dealing with. Fikotoni de potter. And it says here that the agent, that is the shoel, the borrower, is exempt by having given it to this agent. Maybe we'll call him the special agent. It is not considered as if it has reached its destination, i.e. the borrower's domain. If it had been considered in the borrower's domain, the borrower would be guilty, would be obligated to compensate for the death of the animal. But we see not so. Kashya l'Rav Chisda, this is our question on Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda said that when you give an item to an agent appointed in the presence of witnesses, it's as if it reaches the destination. Here, you have an agent appointed in the presence of witnesses, and it's not considered, the cow is not considered as if it has reached its destination. The Gemara says, really, the shaliach, the agent, was not appointed in front of witnesses. And then you'll ask, well, then how do I know that it's his agent? The answer to that is, Kedom Rav Chisda, as Rav Chisda says elsewhere, Beschira Ulekito, the agent is in fact it's his hired hand. It's Schira Lukito, Lukito. There are two pshatim in Rashi. One of the pshatim is he's someone that harvests things. It's obvious that these workers, his hired hand, or his harvester, are people that you clearly associate with the one for whom they are working for. Tanan, we quote from our Mishnah: Lo yitein lo livnoi v'lo lishlucho. In our Mishnah, we spoke about a stolen item, and the thief wants to return it. It's not to be given to the son of the thief, nor the agent, to return it to the victim. Hai shlucho hechidami. The reference to agent, what are the circumstances? Just like we saw before, if he wasn't appointed in front of witnesses, how would we know that it's his agent? Rather, the shiliach was made in the presence of witnesses, and the Mishnah says, don't give it to him, because if you do, it's not as if it's reached the hands of the victim of the theft. But according to Rav Chisda, by handing an item to the agent appointed in front of witnesses, it's considered it as if it has reached its destination. The Gemara answers, Tirgumah Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda explains the Mishnah, the agent spoken of, Beschiro Ulikito. It's, as we said just before, it's his hired hands. Avol Shaliach Shaso Be'edimai. Well, what would the din be, though, regarding a Shliach that was appointed in front of witnesses? Hachinami Dehave Shaliach. Are you then saying that would be a shliach to the extent that it's considered as if it reached its destination? Adetoni Seifa, instead of our Mishnah telling you in the Seifa, Avol Noisein Hu Liad Shliach Beisdin, the Mishnah made a concession to the thief that he could give the stolen item to a court-appointed agent, and not have to go all the way to Modai. Liflog v'lisni v'didei. Why not stay within the topic of a personal agent and say thusly? And here we're going to read some added text that you can see in the Bach emendations that appear on the side. And we're reading from the Bach, Bamed v'mumruim. The Mishnah should have said, if Rav Chisda is correct, it should have said, when is it that you don't give it to the hands of a shliach? B'shliach shelo aso be'edim. That's when you're dealing with an agent that was not appointed in front of witnesses. Avol shliach shaso be'edim. We continue in our Gemara text. A shliach that was appointed in front of witnesses, hachinami dehave shliach. That would be considered full-fledged agency. And the thief should be able to give it to that kind of agent. But yet the Mishnah, when it makes an allowance for giving it to an agent, it speaks in terms of a shliach based in only. The Gemara answers on behalf of Rav Chisda, Amri lo psiko le. In truth, an agent appointed in front of witnesses would have in fact been sufficient, but it wasn't taught because lo psiko le. It's not something we can teach in an unqualified fashion. Shliach Bezin, when it comes to the example that was taught in the Mishnah, the court-appointed agent, lo shno aso nigzal velo shno aso gazlon have shliach. It would make no difference whether the victim had appointed him or the thief had appointed him. Once he receives, let's say, court approval, He is a shliach. Psikole means it's unqualified, meaning it's unqualified and accepted in an unqualified fashion, regardless of who appointed, who nominated him to be the shliach. Shliach shaso be'edim. However, when it comes to an agent appointed in the presence of witnesses, the chiaso nigzal hu dehave shliach. Only if the victim would have appointed him, then he would be an agent. Aso gazlon lo have shaliach. If he were appointed by the thief himself, he would not constitute a shaliach. Lo psikole. It's qualified. If you want to use a double negative, it's not unqualified. Rather, it's qualified. Therefore, the Mishnah avoided using the example of Shliach Shaso Be'edim. Our Mishnah, which we've established as a Shliach, is considered a shaliach, even if he were appointed by the gazlan, by the thief, as long as he is approved by the court. Once again, our Mishnah that we've established, when you're dealing with a shliach beis din, he could have been appointed even by the thief. This is la'afuke, to the exclusion, mehai tana desanya, to the exclusion of the following opinion. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, shliach beis din, a court agent, shaso nigzal velo aso gazlan, it was appointed by the victim, not by the thief. Oshuaso gazlan v'sholach halo v'notal es shelo miyado. He was appointed by the thief, and he went, and the owner took what is his from the hands of the agent, Potter. Then the original thief is exempt. What you infer from here is that if the owner, the victim of the theft, did not take it from the hands of the Gazlan-appointed agent, and something had happened to the item en route, the Gazlan would still bear responsibility. So to make matters simple, you have an example here of a shliach beis din that was appointed as a shliach beis din. There is no exemption in the case that that one of them, the nigzal, appointed him, or the gazlan appointed him. There's no exemption that the thief can enjoy until the owner takes the item that is his from the hands of the agent. Prior to that, though, responsibility remains upon the thief. Our Mishnah taught that the court-appointed agent is a concession that we make to the thief when he gives the item to a shliach beis din. So this Tanaic source represents an additional stringency upon the thief that our Mishnah disagrees with. Our Mishnah represents a more lenient opinion. We didn't mention earlier, but here's another volcano shape. We highlighted before, we emphasized Rav Chisto and Rabbah. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Lozer Dami Trevayu, they both say, Shliach Shaso Be'edim, a shliach that is appointed appointed in the presence of witnesses, Have Shaliach, is considered a full-fledged agent to exempt the obligated party for anything that might happen en route. In other words, giving it to the agent is as if it's reached its destination. V'im toimar Mishnah Seinu. You'll ask, well, what about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah said, don't give it to... In the case of our Mishnah, we had a thief and he wanted to return the item, and it said, don't give it to the agent. And the thinking right now is, that is a reference to an agent that was made in front of witnesses. We answer, on behalf of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, B'mamtzi lo shaliach. The Omar Le, Mamtzi lo means he made the agent available to him. We're not talking about a case of an agent appointed in front of witnesses, but rather, it's this situation, Mamtzi lo shaliach. The owner of the item requested of his friend, requested of his friend, you know, go to that thief, make yourself available to bring the item to me. Maybe the thief doesn't have anyone that he can appoint in front of witnesses. De Omar Le, He says, the nigzal, the victim of the theft, says, Is li zuzi gabi planya. I have money by him, that guy who stole from me. V'lo kol meshadiluhu. And up till now, he hasn't sent the money to me. Is chazile, would you please go and make yourself, literally appear to him, make yourself available to him. Dilmo inish hu delo mishkach lishdurilei. Maybe the whole reason he hasn't sent it is because he hasn't found someone with whom to send it. But just to review the main point here. If, however, the thief had appointed an agent in the presence of witnesses, he could have given it to that agent, and that would have exempted the thief from any further responsibility. Inami, another explanation as far as the Mishnah is concerned, where it said, don't send it with the shaliach. It wasn't the case of a shaliach that was appointed in front of witnesses, though. As Rav Chisto explained earlier, b'schira ulekito, an agent that really was his hired hand. And in that way, we knew that it was his agent, but it wasn't someone appointed as an agent in the presence of witnesses. Before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at our topic heading, the Nosei, which reads, Drachim Shainim, different methods, the Efsher Shlichas Mamon Chazor El Bailov, that money be returned to its owner, Kagon Chazoras Pikadon LeBailov, like the return of an entrusted item back to the owner from a situation of it being under guard, watched by a Bailey, Chazoras Kesef LeMalva, or the return of money owed to a lender of money. So the topic that we're dealing with now are different accepted methods of return of such items. The Gemara, Omar Yehuda, Omar Shmuel. We continue at the top of Amud Beis. Ein mishalchin mois bediukni v'afilu edim chasumim alof. The key word diukni needs explanations. We look at Rashi at the top. Bediukni mosar lo bal hapikodon lishliach simonim. The owner of the entrusted article gives to an agent signs, the kosav lo chosmoy bigeres, and attaches his signature to a document, to a letter, umosuloi, and he gives it to the agent, v'yomer lo lech v'hera liploni, show this document with the signs describing the entrusted item and my signature, my chosem, show it to so and so. V'itein loch mois shiesh li biyodo, and he'll give you my money that's currently in his possession. So the first opinion, Shmuel, he says that the borrower of the money or the shomer shall not rely on this diukni. And our Gemara says, even if witnesses are signed therein. We continue to the next opinion, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Im Edim Chasumin Olea Mishachin. If the diukni in fact has witnesses that signed it, then the party shall send the mois, the monies. The Gemara asks, Amri L'Shmuel, Maitakata, according to Shmuel, then what's the solution? How can items ever be returned to their owner? How can a borrower of money, short of himself going to the lender and handing it the money in his hand, how else could he send the money? We answer. Note that we have a long answer marking. The method would be as follows. Kiha, but maybe before we go on, the issue here is similar to the issue we were dealing with earlier. If you have money or items that you owe to somebody, who bears responsibility to to that which may befall them en route back. The general understanding is that until the owner gets his item back, the party who was holding on to it in the meantime, whether it be the bailee or the borrower, will bear responsibility. So according to Shmuel, is there a way that the item, the money, can be returned in such a way that the lender, the borrower, or the bailee will be exempt from what we call oinus haderech, any evils that befall the item en route back? So what solution is there? So we answer, Kiha de Rabbi Abba have a masik zuzi b'derav Yosef bar Chama. It means Rabbi Abba was trying to collect money from Rav Yosef, who owed Rabbi Abba some money. Amar le the Rav Safra. In this Gemara, there are a lot of names, so you have to keep track of who the speaker is at each point. So Amar le Rabbi Abba says to Rav Safra. Rav Safra is going to be the agent in this particular scene. Bahadi de Osis, on your way back from there, Aisinu Niali, bring my cash to me. In other words, go to Rav Yosef Bachama and bring me my money. Ki Oza Lahosam, when Rav Safra went there, Omar Le Rova Braid. Rova, the son of Rav Yosef, said, Mi Kosav Loch is Kabalti? Did Rabbi Abba write over a document indicating I have received it? In other words, by Dad giving you the money, will it be considered as if Rabbi Abba has already received it? If that be the case, so then fine, we'll give you the money and we're off the hook. Amar Leilo, Rav Safra said, no, I don't have such a document. I don't have such a receipt that indicates that Rabbi Abba already received it. That by your giving me, Reb Safra, the agent, the money, it's as if Rabbi Abba already received. I don't have such a document. So Rava says, "E hachi, if that's the case, Zilbereshav yichtoiv loch is kabalti. Go first, get such a document wherein he writes, I have received the money, namely wherein Rabbi Abba would indicate that the money, when handed to you, Rav Safra, the agent, it's as if Rabbi Abba has received it, and then we'll give you the money. L'sof Amalei, then Rava said, before her going any further, he said, I kosav loch nami is kabati lav klumhu. Even if Rabbi Abba would write such a document, I have received the money, it's still nothing. Dilma, because maybe Ada Os is shochiv Rabbi Abba. While you're en route, Rabbi Abba himself might pass away. Rabbi Abba was elderly. He might die. V'noflu zuzi kamiyasmi. And the monies would be inherited, the debt would be inherited by the heirs, by the children of Rabbi Abba. V'skabalti de Rabbi Abba, lav klumhu, and the hiskabalti statement written out by Rabbi Abba would have no bearing regarding his heirs. They would still lay claim on the money. It would still be money that the father, that Rav Yosef, would still be obligated to care for, to be responsible for, if anything happens en route. Omar Le Vela Maita Kantasur of Safra, the agent, says, well, what then is the solution? Answer. Zil, you go, nakninu loch agav ara, let Rabbi Abba transfer the ownership of the money, the rights to the money, to you. Agav ara means along with a piece of land. The amount of land can in fact be a negligible amount of land, but what we want you to do, says Rava, representing his father, says, have the owner, Rabbi Abba, transfer the money to you. Now, the money, how is he, if my father's holding on to my, how is Rabbi Abba going to transfer the money? So the answer to that is, by Rabbi Abba transferring some land to you, along with the land, the word agav, ara, means along with your acquisition of the land. It could be a symbolic amount of land, but along with that, you become the owner of the money wherever it is. So that you, Rav Safra, will become the owner. V'ta'at, then you come, k'sov lon hiskabalti. Now, you as the owner, when we give you the money, you'll write, I received it. It's a receipt. It's a receipt. It's a total receipt of the money by the owner. You are the new owner. What happens after that is of no interest to us, to Rav Sa, to Rabbi Yosef and his son. We've obviously fulfilled all our obligations. And there's a story that actually illustrates this in practice. Kihadar of Safra, Kihadar of Papa, have a masik tracer alfi zuzi bechazoi. Rav Papa had money, it was tracer alfi, tracer is 12 alfi, 1,000, 12,000 zuz were owed to Rav Papa bechazoi, name of a place. They in bechazoi owed him this money. Akninu nialei l'Rav Shmuel Barabo, agav asibo de beise. And Rav Papa transferred ownership rights to that 12,000 zuz to his agent, Rav Shmuel Bar Abba. How did Rav Papa transfer money that was in Bei Chazoi to Rav Shmuel Bar Abba? Agav Asipa de Beise, through giving possession to Rav Shmuel the threshold of his house, or the back part of his house. So Rav Papa gave ownership of a little piece of his house. House is considered like ara. We mentioned like it's real estate. It's a piece of ground as far as we're concerned. And along with your acquiring ground, you're entitled to acquire portables. That's called a kinyan agav. So now Rav Shmuel becomes the legal owner of the money that is being collected. And he did what we said before. The Gemara's Tursa doesn't spell out everything we saw before. And he got the money from the Bei Chazoi people. They were willing to give to Shmuel Bar Abba, being that he has become the owner of the money. They gave him the money. He also, when Rav Shmuel came back with the money, Rav Papa was overjoyed. Nofak li'ape ad tovech. He, Rav Papa, went out to greet Rav Shmuel. He ran all the way to Tovech, which is the name of a place, to greet him, happy to see his money back. Before we go further in the Gemara, we have a topic heading on the side. We're going to prove or to demonstrate that the payment of the fifth that was mentioned in the Mishnah. The Mishnah described a thief that swore falsely that he didn't have the item, and then subsequently admitted that he did. He has to pay not only the principal, but as a fifth. That fifth that's mentioned in the Mishnah, avi tashlum shel mamon, it's considered a mamon payment. A mamon payment is a legal category of money payments. There are other categories when it comes to describing money owed. Another category one might call a knas, a fine. Another category might be something called kapora. Kapora means atonement. It's money that's paid to serve the purpose of atoning. When we speak about mamon, in contrast to kapora, in contrast to knas, mamon is a straightforward financial obligation. Now, we turn to the Gemara. Nosan, quoting from the Mishnah, Nosan lo es hakeren, and it went on to say, Velo Nosan lo es hachoymesh, ein tzorach lelechacharov. That once the keren, the principal, was paid by the thief, and he didn't yet pay the added fifth, the Mishnah relieves the thief of the obligation of going all the way to the victim himself to pay the fifth. Alma chomesh mamoinahu. We see from here that the Chumash is a mamon payment. From the fact, and this is something that Rashi points out, from the fact that the Mishnah had to tell me this, that he doesn't have to go all the way with it, with the Chumash to the victim, it must be that it's a mamon type payment. Ve'im mayis, if the thief dies, mishalmi le yorshim, the heirs are obligated to pay it. This is in contrast to a form of payment that we would call atonement based. If a person died, so the heirs would not have to pay that. It's their father that needed atonement, but in the meantime he died, then there's no point in trying to atone for a dead man. Utnan nami, and we have the following teaching in our Mishnah as well. Nosan es hakeren v'nishba l'chomesh. Our Mishnah taught that if the thief paid the keren, and he swore that he swore falsely that he already paid the fifth as well, and then admitted that he didn't pay the fifth, hare moisiv chomesh al chomesh, he has to add a fifth to the fifth. Alma chumsha mamoinahu. This shows us that the chomesh payment, the obligation of adding a fifth, the initial fifth, is a mamon payment. And therefore, when you swear falsely concerning a mamon payment, it generates the need for paying another fifth. Just like the denial of the keren under oath and subsequent confession will generate a fifth. That shows you that you're dealing with that category of payment called mamon. Vitanyo nami hochi, and we have a brisa that says similarly. Hagozel es chavero v'nishbaloi umes. Person stole from his friend and swore, denied falsely, and then the thief died. Yorshim mishamen keren v'choymesh upturin min ha'osham. The heirs of the thief pay the principal amount that their father stole, and the fifth, they are exempt from bringing the guilt offering. The fact that the heirs have to pay the fifth, we indicated before, that shows that it's a mamon type payment. The Gemara asks, V'yorshin b'nei shlomi b'lei shlomi chumsho davu and havu v'rominu. Is it so that heirs pay the fifth that was owed by their father? But we have now a Tanaic source that will appear to contradict that. You'll notice that we have a little base in a diamond. This corresponds to the Aleph that we had just a few lines up. So we have a second source which would seem to contradict the, and it says as follows. Now this is a source whose beginning is found in Teras Kehanim, in the Midrashic literature on the book of Leviticus, the book of Vayikra. Rashi gives you what the beginning words were that you don't see in our Gemara. So if you look in the Rashi, we have a little frame around the words, being that it's a Tanaic source being quoted. It says in the Pasuk Asher Gozal, Al Gzeila hu moisiv chemesh, v'lo al gzeila soviv. A person adds a fifth for theft that he committed, not for theft that one's father committed. We continue in our Gemara text, Adayin ani oimer emosai eno mishalim chemesh al gzeil oviv. I would think that when is it that the heir does not add a fifth to his father's theft? Bizman shaloi nishba. When there was no oath. Lohu velo aviv. Not the heir nor the father. Hu velo aviv. Aviv velo hu. Hu ve aviv minayin. What about cases where the heir swore falsely? Not the father, or the father, but not the heir. He, the heir, and the father. Minayin. From where do we know that even so, there's no payment on the part of the heir of the fifth for a theft that the father committed. Tamalomar Asher Gozal Vasher Oshak. Who pays the fifth? The one who committed the thief, the one who Oshak withheld his workers' pay. Vahu, the son, Lo Gozal Velo Oshak, he didn't commit the theft nor the Oshek. Well, what do we see from here? We see that heirs do not pay fifths for theft father committed. So source Beis contradicts source Aleph. Omar Rav Nachman lo kasha. There's no contradiction. Kan shahida, kan shalohida. In source Aleph, in addition to the false oath, there was also confession. It was followed by confession that we lied, that I lied. In source Beis, there was no confession. Now, we raise a question. Notice a long question. If source Beis features a case where there was no confession, Karen Nami Lo Mishalem, there would be no payment of the principal either. And we were focusing on the Chomesh. But if there's no confession, there would be no payment of the principal either. V'chitema chinami de lo mishalem. And if you say that's right, the heir doesn't pay the principal either. And as in the source that we read, the source intends to tell us that there's no payment of principal either. From the fact that the source is seeking out the payment of the fifth, lememro de keren mishalem, that indicates to us that there's no question regarding the principle that the heir does pay. But once again, if there's no confession, there would be no payment of principle. The oid tanya, and we have the following brisa. It says, Vadayan ani oimer, emosai hu mishalem keren al gezel aviv. When is it that the son, the heir, would pay the principal for theft committed by the father? Bizman shenishba hu v'aviv. That's when there was an oath taken by him and by his father. Aviv alohu hu v'lo aviv. Father and not the heir, or the heir not the father. Lohu v'lo aviv minayin. Not he nor the father. From where do we know that the son pays the principal? Talmud Lomar, Gezela, V'Oishek, Aveda U'Pikadon. These are all terms that are found in the Pasuk. Yesh Talmud. That's an expression that needs to be clarified. Yesh Talmud. V'yosim Rav Huna, V'komer lo ha-shmaitza. Rav Huna was seated and he said over this teaching, Amar le Rabba Bray, Rav Huna's son, Rabba, asked, Yesh Talmud Komar Mor? Yesh Talmud means something that's derived through oral tradition. Oy Yishtalmud Komar Mor? Or are you saying that Yishtalmud, it's money that must be paid, but not based on psukim, based on Savora, based on logic. Amar le Yesh Talmud Komino? Amri, I say that the heir shall pay the principal, and it's based on psukim, based on oral. It's based on an actual scriptural references, not just svara. It appears to me that the centrality of hoida, in order to generate the obligation of return, and without that, then we wouldn't have the chiyuv, is something that was discussed at the end of Daf Kuf Gimel Amud Beis. And if you look at Rashi, three lines from the end of Kuf Gimel Amud Beis, Lo Sakya Doloi Hoida, the Kaporavi Shavon, the Kroa Ahoida Ksiv. The need for atonement and return of the item is based on hoidah, based on his confessing. Dichtiv begezel ager v'hisvadu es chatosam. So the point here of the question. If there's no hoidah, then there should not be any payment of the principal either, is something that is has a scriptural basis. So how is it that the son is going to pay the principal if, as you try to resolve the sources by saying that the source in Teiras Kehanim was talking about a case of no hoidah? If there was no hoidah, then the source Beis, which was from Teiras Kehanim, then even the principal would not be paid either. And yet, it says that the son does pay the principal. The Gemara answers, Elamai loy hoide. What was meant by loy hoide that Rav Nachman mentioned earlier? Loy hoide oviv ve hoide beno. The father did not confess, but the son did confess. So the fact that the father did not confess, that's reason for there being an exemption of the Chumash, with the son having yes confessed. So we're using that to explain why the son has to pay the principal of that which the father stole. The Gemara asks, and here we have a rigorous give and take discussion, which we highlight by using triangles in alternating directions. So we ask, V'nechayev beno chomesh ashvua didei, why not obligate the son for paying the chomesh because of his having sworn falsely? The arrow that you have to the immediate side of the Gemara text, I think, is extremely helpful, because you look back, what did we see earlier? In that source, we saw who? The lo aviv. The heir had sworn falsely, and not the father, and the result of that source was that the son will not pay the chomesh. But if you're telling me that you're talking about a case where the father did not confess, but the son did, so should the son not have to pay a chomesh for his own false oath? Amri, we answer, b'she'ein gezeilo kayemes. The stolen item is no longer around. And here Rashi adds critical information. B'she'ein gezeilo kayemes, Rashi says, d'lav ole ramyo l'shlumi. If the stolen item is not around anymore, so it's not obligatory on the heir to pay. Disnan, as it says later, Hagezel umachil is vanapturim lishalem. If a man stole, and whatever he stole, he used to feed his children, so that the stolen goods are not around anymore, they don't have to pay. Hilkoch ikofar, if the son swears, denies having it. Kfiras vorim ba'almohi, it's simply a denial of mere words. You're not denying an actual item. Ushvuas bituihu, it's considered an articulated oath, not a financial related oath. Deleka chomesh, for simply swearing false oaths that have no financial ramifications, there's no additional fifth. Well, the Gemara asks, I b'she'en gezeilo kayemes, if the exemption for the fifth is based on the, in other words, it was a false oath, but the son is not going to pay the fifth because the gezeila is not around, afilu keren nami lo mishalem. So then, even the keren, even the principal, should not be obligated to pay. And yet we saw in the brisa that the son does pay the keren, the principal. Lo tzricha. So we answer, how do we make this distinction? Deiko achrayas nechosim. The son inherited property from his father, and the property of the thief carries upon it his responsibility. So that the obligation of paying the principal is contained within the property that the son inherited. The Gemara asks, "V'chi'iko achrayas nechosa mayhave?" So even if there is responsibility borne by the land, in other words, the land serves as a means of collection. So what? Milva al pehi, umilva al peh eino goive lo min hayorshim v'lo min halukuchos. Sof kol sof, you're dealing with an oral obligation. You're not dealing with a contractual agreement that would create responsibility, let's say far-reaching responsibility. It's considered, this debt is considered an oral type payment, and such payments are not collectible from heirs, not from heirs nor from purchasers. If someone, let us say, extended money in a loan without having a document attesting to it, and the loan was extended at the Aleph Nisan, the beginning of the month of Nisan, just as an arbitrary example, and that the borrower of the money then sold some of his properties at the 20th of the month, the lender would not be able to seize upon those properties. He doesn't develop a lien over them. As long as something is milva al peh, it's considered something is categorized as an oral debt, there's no collection. And what we emphasize here, you can see with our dashed in the line, there's no collection from heirs either. The Gemara responds, Amri, we answer, and we continue at the top of Daf Kuf Hei, B'she'omad bedin. The thief, before he died, was brought to court. He stood on trial, so to speak. He stood in front of the court. And the Gemara asks, well, I b'she'omad bedin, if he stood for a court ruling on the matter, then afilu chomesh nami mishalem, then even the fifth should have to be paid. So now, in response to this question, that if there was amoda bedin, why then is the fifth not paid? Omar Rav Huna Breid Rav Yoshua. You'll notice we have a number one. There's another approach in a few lines. Rav Huna Rav Yoshua says, "Lefi she'ein mishalmin choymish al kfiras shibud karkois." The fifth is not added when there is an oath, a false oath, concerning a payment that is based on land. We said in this case that there was the father had left karka, he had left land that the son inherited, and as a result of that, there is an obligation on the part of the son to pay the principal. And we asked, but shouldn't there be a fifth added as well, because the son swore falsely? So we say that fifths are not added when the money, or when the payment is based on land. That idea, by the way, is supported by scriptural references. Rava Omar, Rava's approach is that in fact the gezela is around. The stolen item is still around. Hocha b'may askinon, kagon shoisa diskia shel aviv mufkedes biad achirim. Diskia is a type of vessel, and within the vessel that belonged to this heir's father, the thief, the stolen item was in that vessel. However, the vessel with the stolen item was entrusted in the hands of others. Karen mishalim do isay. The son has to pay the principal because the principal, the item stolen, is still around. Chaymish lo mishalim. The additional fifth is not paid. The son doesn't pay that. The ishtaba, when he swore that I don't have it, Bekushto ishtaba daholo havayoda. He was actually swearing an honest oath. He didn't know that the item was still in existence. And we call this Libe Anse. His own thinking led him astray. He really thought that the item was no longer in existence at the time that he swore. And as such, it's not considered a false oath. So there's not going to be any need for adding a fifth concerning the son's denial under oath. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.